Good morning. I am Chong, joined by Sharad Chatwala and Lynn Mark. Now, the number of high-skilled jobs are not growing as fast as low-skilled ones. The talk is that retrenched workers and fresh grads are now fighting it out for the same jobs. Consider this data from Bank Negara and the Malaysian Employers Federation.
Yes, and between 2010 and 2017, the number of degree holders in the workforce increased by an average of more than 170,000 people per year. And in contrast, the net number of high-skilled jobs created was only at around 98,500 annually. Economic growth, which was mostly spurred by private consumption, grew 4.7% in 2018, but the number of jobs have only shown a 2.5% growth from 2017 to last year.
So a research from Khazanah Research Institute highlighted that young workers in unskilled job and 50% of those in low-skilled manual jobs are over qualified for these occupations.
So for more on this, we turn to the Executive Director of the Malaysian Employers Federation, Datuk Shamsuddin Badan. Datuk, welcome to BFM. Are you finding that retrenched workers and fresh grads are competing with each other in the job market?
Yes, I think that is very much the scenario today. And I think that is not very interesting in the sense that many of the graduates now actually are doing jobs that are one step or even two steps down their actual qualification.
So does this mean, Dato, that employers are more concerned about cost rather than experience? Is that what has resulted in this disconnect between graduates and the jobs that they're doing?
First, of course, is the question of cost that employers are having to bear, in the sense that now the cost of doing business is very much higher. What more with increases in cost due to some of the policies introduced by the government that actually, you know, push the cost very much higher. And of course, the other part is that as new graduates, they are not having the necessary skills to actually perform the job that are expected out of them. So most of the companies would actually put them on what they call it as observation basis, put them to a lower job and see whether they have the attitude and the aptitude to actually be with the company and also contributing to the growth of the company. So what normally happens is that they will be put at a lower position, and if the company find that they have the necessary attitude and they can be trained and retrained, then of course the company will retain them and of course train them for the higher position. So that is what is normally happening, rather than putting them straight away to the higher position and expect them to perform those jobs.
Yeah, Dato, I mean, there's a disparity between a low-skilled job as well as the high-skilled jobs. Now, why is the high-skilled job not growing as fast as the low-skilled ones in Malaysia?
Yeah, that I think is something to do with the ability of the companies to actually create those high-skilled jobs. Yeah? And of course, this is more like waiting game, wait and see where actually the trend is going, whether it is worthwhile for the company to actually invest in higher technology. And of course, higher technology means require higher skill. And this is, I would say, always a chicken and egg situation, because if the company is expected to invest more capital to acquire new technology, things like that, then of course they must make sure that there is demand for their product, there is demand for their services. And this is something that they are not very sure. And currently, the economic indicators are really not assisting this kind of situation, because, say, for example, the GDP growth of Malaysia also had been revised downward. And all over the world, also, the growth is also not very encouraging.
Dato, the Malaysian Insight cited your good selves as saying that there were 21,000 retrenchments last year. Are you projecting an increase for this year? And what is your estimate?
Of course, you know, initially I had mentioned that possibly this year, because of the trend that we see, retrenchment may even go up to 30,000. But of course, the what is happening actually is very worrying, in the sense that the figures for up to March this year is about slightly more than 10,000 employees were retrenched. So that, I think, it is a worrying trend, in the sense that more retrenchment will be happening. And if looking at a trend for the first 3 months, then possibly it may be even higher than 30,000 that we had estimated earlier.
And Dato, which sectors do you think are most vulnerable, and what do you think is driving this increase in retrenchments?
So, for example, if you observe, the current situation, if you go to any of the shopping complexes, you can see that quite a number of shops had ceased business. And the number of kiosks within the shopping complexes also had very much reduced, despite the fact that, say, for example, Hari Raya is coming, thing like that. So this is something that now what is really happening is that many of the smaller businesses are actually not able to survive. And of course, if you take the total sum of the people involved, then the figure will be very much higher. Yeah. And this is especially when you're talking about retail trade and also some of the other sectors like construction. Also, we can see that it is not very active now because of the current trend of glut in the property market, thing like that.
All right, Dato. Thanks so much for your time. That was Dato Shamsuddin Badan, the Executive Director for the Malaysian Employees Federation. Now, very interesting comments, and I can't help but think and recall my discussion last week with some senior people at Maxis. I attended the conference, and it was all about the Internet of Things and big data and how mobile companies are moving towards managed services and cloud computing services away from the whole consumer-oriented focus. Now, this is interesting because some of the comments from the technology folks inside there, they told me, or they told the crowd specifically, that there's a huge paucity of jobs, job applicants for roles like a data scientist, for data analytics, for coders and programmers, for people who can build stuff and widgets for a future which is all about the machine and deep learning and machine-to-machine learning.
Yeah, and there was a report by JobStreet recently that showed that the talent landscape is skewing towards digital skills, as you mentioned, Chuang, but there are a very limited number of graduates with those skills actually available. And I guess it also ties in with what Dato' Shamsuddin said. It's that new graduates starting jobs typically still don't have the skills to do the jobs that are expected of them. So this makes me think, is there some kind of educational deficit here
happening? Universities have been very, very slow in terms of coming up with new programs and new courses to match the economy's need for such jobs. Because if universities right now are producing graduates in these fields like data scientists and data analytics, they will be finding jobs in a flash. But they're not. Why? Because they're coming up with degrees that are not relevant in the modern workforce.
Yeah, whether or not you can pass this issue to HRDF as well. I mean, that gap between fresh graduate and then getting into speed with the skills that companies require. I think there are rooms when HRDF do have a lot of funds to train, fresh graduate.
Well, the problem with the HRDF is they are more downstream processes, right? What you want are upstream innovations from the private sector, from the public sector. So I took very great personal interest in this because we've all got children, right, Paul, Sharitz, you and I, and we've got to prepare our children for a future where they've got gainful employment. And if you come out now with, say, a law degree, that ain't going to cut it because lawyers are getting disrupted in America and they'll reach our shores. And doctors, the same thing because of technology. What will get you hired is a skill in the digital field. No question about it.
Yeah, and also I think just looking at the possible oversupply of graduates who are studying liberal arts and general degrees, which is, perhaps it's not something that they're looking for. And more looking for data analytics skill instead.
The other factor to consider just very quickly as well is the brain drain, because we are losing highly skilled graduates to countries like Singapore in the region as well as the US and the UK. So that could be another factor contributing to the lack of talent here in Malaysia as well.
So where's Grab headquartered now? Singapore?
Singapore.
Not Malaysia. Okay, let's switch our attentions to the ECRL. Now, of course, Tun Dime Zainuddin, former Minister of Finance and now quite omnipresent figure in the current government with no specific role. He's expressed confidence that the East Coast Rail Link, the price tag of 44 billion ringgit, might see a further reduction yet. And don't forget that the original cost was 65.5 billion ringgit. He brought it down by that quantum with 21.5 billion ringgit saving. He thinks that there could be further savings in the offing.
And so among some of the possible ways that could be achieved would be actions to be taken with China Exim Bank, perhaps requesting for a lower loan amount or an expansion of the grace and repayment periods, getting refunds from China Communications Construction Co. as per the original contract for Phase 2, the double tracking, as well as the northern extension of the ECRL. Total refunds of 1 billion ringgit within the month.
Yeah, so some of the things, some good news is that there's been some successful renegotiation of the supplementary agreement, and now we get to continue the ECRL project, which has a very positive outlook on the construction companies. And other than that, it will also bolster investors' confidence among Chinese companies, which is, a lot of them are willing to invest in Malaysia over time in billions of ringgit.
Well, put it this way, if you get the East Coast Rail Link up and running, basically produce from China won't have to sit in a boat and round the Cape of the peninsula, round south of Singapore. And we'll take the Singaporeans out of the equation. Wouldn't that be fantastic? No, not really. But it will help mitigate the load on the Singaporean port. Now, Formula One, our good Prime Minister, the original thought provoker where the race is concerned, he wants to bring the race back to the country. Now, what do you guys think about that? Because there's a poll going on Twitter, and it's already got millions and millions of responses in terms of what Malaysians think about this.
An example of exaggeration. There you go.
Yes, so Din Mahathir, so why would we want to bring back the F1? So he's given a couple of reasons, including stimulating Malaysians to enter the automotive industry. And of course, the Prime Minister believes that the reintroduction of the Malaysian Grand Prix would generate positive publicity for the country, as well as bringing large crowds to the event. So he considers that this would be worthwhile for the country.
Yeah, at the same time, there's no news about the exact timing and as to when this race will return to Malaysia. But the question is, why was it scrapped in the first place, right? So previous administration cancelled the event, citing that it wasn't making money. There was declining returns. And, to put it into context, in 2017, the Malaysian government had said that they were no longer prepared to pay $67 million US a year just to stage the race.
Well, do you know what, right? I'm not surprised that the Prime Minister wants Formula One to be reinstated because, right, we've got a third national car in the offing. We don't know quite what that will be. And there's also a flying car. And obviously, all things automotive, the marquee events for all things automotive is really Formula One. We are really in a golden era of Formula One right now. Lewis Hamilton, 5 times world champion. He's got the same number of world championships as Juan Manuel Fangio, the Argentinian legend from the 50s. And he was on the same grid as Sebastian Vettel. Vettel's got 4 world championships. So, I mean, we've got legends on the grid right now. And what better way than to feast the eyes on this talent than in Malaysia rather than Singapore? Malaysia's Formula One race really didn't cut it because we didn't do as many things as the Singaporeans did, just 3 hours away by car because they made it a whole marquee event. It was a weekend, it was a week-long bonanza of parties and glitz and glamour. We had it as a race and that was it. So we've really got to rethink the strategy and the platform if we want to bring the race back to the country.
It's partly also because Singapore, yeah, you mentioned, it's a week-long party essentially
it
in
is,
Singapore
it
when
is.
The Grand Prix happens
yeah.
there because it's a very vibrant venue and the atmosphere is fantastic. Whereas if you compare it to here, the Sepang venue is in a more rural area, so it's not really surprising then that it won't attract as many people. And a declining spectator turnout was one of the main reasons for the Grand Prix to be cancelled in the first place. Now, at one point, F1 commercial chief Eccleston conceded in April of 2017 that the reason as well why several new F1 events are struggling financially is due to the fact that his organisation was charging them too much for what they provide. So examples of short-lived F1 events are the Indian Grand Prix as well as the Korean Grand Prix.
Yeah, and besides the proximity between Malaysia and Singapore and also the 1 week long party, and it's also the scheduling, isn't it? I mean, it's every 2 weeks, and I think it's just difficult for spectators to spend, to spend money just to come back to this region, within a short period of time, unless we share the party with Singapore.
Of course. And we asked Malaysians what they thought. We had 95 million responders, minus the million at the end. We had 95. And they're evenly split between yes, no, and don't care. Okay, it is now 7:58 in the morning. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.